Hey, everybody, Pro Bowl vote is here. An awesome Pro Bowl starts with awesome players, and your vote helps decide who gets a spot on the AFC and the NFC roster. Show your love, cast your vote, and make sure your favorite players make it to the 2020 Pro Bowl. Vote today and be entered to win exclusive prizes at NFL.com/Pro Bowl vote. And speaking of football, let's start the show.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program, available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Oh yes, hi and hello football fans. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program, presented as always by our pals over at Zaxby's, home of the famous chicken fingers, wings, and salads. Go get you some, can't wait. Miami, Florida is closer than you think it is. Perhaps Eddie Spaghetti, we can pay a visit there when we pay a visit to the Sunshine State. There's Eddie Spaghetti over there, and look who's seated to my immediate right. What a pleasure. I barely recognize him. It's been so long. It's our old pal. You listen to him, if you're lucky enough to do so, when the Los Angeles Rams are playing. He sits alongside J.B. Long. You watch him on NFL Network all over the place. It's Maurice Jones-Drew. What's happening, fella?
I'm doing wonderful, Shaq.
Are you?
I mean, not really. I'm all in. I feel like all my – well, I can't say all my teams because the Raiders are actually playing really well right now. They have a chance to win the West.
I don't know. I don't even know that you can still claim them as your Raiders.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up a Raiders fan. I played for them for 1 year.
I know, but if you had to rank them, they would now be a distant third.
They're definitely third.
Right.
I mean, they didn't pay as much as the Jags, and then they don't currently pay me. So
you're back from a trip to the banks of the Three Rivers. One, I'm envious, and two, I say that we can listen to you alongside J.B. Long, but based on a preseason bet that you and me made, which was if the Steelers miss the playoffs and the Rams make it, the Dave Dameshek football program in the 2020 offseason becomes the Maurice Jones-Drew football program.
Right.
That's looking like that's not going to happen.
It's very slim. It's
now,
very slim probability.
If it is the Steelers in the postseason and no Rams, then for one game, Dave Dameshek gets to sit in the booth with J.B. Long, and I think we are tracking in that direction, Maurice.
You know, it's funny you say that because in the booth next to me in Heinz Field, which was awesome, by the way, Jack Del Rio was there, my old football coach, and he calls the games for ESPN Radio. And we got a chance to talk. He does their national broadcast. And he said, this game here is a playoff game. And I mean, he used to tell us that, too. Like, there's certain times of the season, depending on the team's records and the schedule going forward, like, you may play a playoff game in the regular season. He was like, this is what this is, because whoever loses this one, you pretty much, you're on a real uphill. You remember Football Mountain? That's what you're on. You're climbing for real now.
Mount Lombardi, you and me, Maurice, climbing up the side of it come January. Maybe we'll get back to that in a couple of months. But, listen, Del Rio, as an aside, he paid us a visit in Studio 66 over the summertime, and he regaled us with some stories about Maurice Jones-Drew.
they're probably,
he loved you.
That's my guy, man. We had a great conversation, but he was just talking about it, and so I firmly believe the same thing because, you know, I think if Pittsburgh were lost, you guys would have been, what, 4-5?
4-5. I did think, though, that the head-to-head, and I continue to stand by this, but now they're ahead of schedule as far as I'm concerned, where Pittsburgh is, they have the head-to-head against the Chargers,
right,
and that still matters. The Chargers are not completely out of it. One, and two, now more significantly, they have the head-to-head against the Colts. Then the Colts lose on Sunday.
Right.
Then, as I forecasted they would, the Browns vanquished the Bills. So now the head-to-heads for Pittsburgh are kind of coming together, and they have two now coming up with Cleveland. If they can take one of those two, I think they're really in good shape for getting to January.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The AFC as a whole is very interesting. And then, you know, in that situation, because there's so many teams right there in the mix. Like, you still have the Jags that have an opportunity. Obviously, the Colts have fallen back. Now,
huge win for the Titans.
Yeah, huge win for the
Titans. You know who called that one, Maurice?
Did you
Dave
call
Dave Dameshek called
call
that one, too, didn't I, Eddie Spaghetti?
I didn't believe that. I didn't, but, I mean, I don't know how somehow they found a way. I mean, Derrick Henry was just running rampant.
Maurice, but that's the trend. If you're let's bounce around. Let's do a good Week 10 review. I like to hear. We haven't seen you in so long.
Yeah,
I'd like
not
to catch up with the man, Maurice Jones-Drew. But let's jump in on hot football action and start there. This is what I said exactly 1 month ago to today. I announced, I'm sorry, the Chiefs are exciting. I'd like to see them go far. The Patrick Mahomes storyline is great, but this is shaping up to be Dan Marino in the mid-80s. This is a flawed team. Patrick Mahomes can't cover up everything. And just like I said before the Titans game, they are going to get trucked by Derrick Henry. They're not built to there's just no way that they're going to be able to stand up to that in at minimum two playoff games in the AFC. And probably the way it's shaping up, it's going to be three games that they're going to have to be able to stop a playoff caliber run offense. That's just not going to work out for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, like, this is when Derrick Henry starts to run.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
I want to say last year he had like 1,000 yards in four games or something like that. You're going to see that now. They're literally going to lean on him as the weather is turning. And so I think the Titans are going to be very scary. Now, they have some injuries, and you're starting to see the injury bug kind of pick up, but I think Derrick Henry and the Titans are a team that's very sneaky. Now, you want to talk about a team that's scary? Is the Houston Texans. And I know they had a bye week this week, but I got a chance to watch them in London play the Jags, and Deshaun Watson is definitely up there for the MVP. Now, he's battling some other guys, but he was out there with no one to block for.
Maurice, you know what? I'm going to say something to you that might feel like I don't know what it sounds like, but you and I, no jive. The no jive policy
right,
is always,
always
in effect
always
when we kibitz, and so let's be straight. I think it's a fascinating place we've reached, and I remember when Tony Dungy won the Super Bowl that, you know, the first, and then Doug Williams, the first black man to win a Super Bowl, and it was really, the thing was, I want to get our society to a place where that doesn't come up anymore. Well, it still comes up, and I think it's worth noting. Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, and Deshaun Watson, three black QBs, your three top MVP candidates, and who's probably third or fourth in that? A white running back, Christian McCaffrey.
It's crazy, right?
It's interesting, the inversion of that.
I love it because I think, again, like it shows that it doesn't matter what color you are, and as long as you have game. And I think Christian McCaffrey's done a phenomenal job. But going back to those quarterbacks, though, you talk about the AFC, you obviously Pittsburgh, Baltimore coming out of the North. You have possibly the Houston Tech. All four of the South teams, I think, still have a shot if the Colts.
That's a bad loss for the. I mean, obviously,
it's
you don't want to lose
loss,
to the Dolphins. That's going to haunt them probably.
It probably is going to come back and bite them in the butt. But then you go to the West. You still have the Chiefs and the Raiders. And possibly the Chargers, right?
I got news for you. The Chargers are the X factor in the AFC West because now it sets up, especially if the Chargers, do not be surprised as the Chiefs head out to Carson, California. Don't be stunned if the Chargers win that game or
wouldn't be.
Going back out to Arrowhead. One way or the other, they have a chance to win that game. And as it sets up now, as I said to David and to Darren Carr in advance of that game, your brother doesn't even need to go into Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs for you guys to win the division. Look at how their schedule sets up. If they continue to play at the level they've played at, which is no certainty, but if they do, the Raiders should get one of those two wild cards.
Yeah,
or they might win the division.
Right?
They absolutely
so,
can win the division. Laugh all you want.
So you have that, and then you go to the AFC East, and you have Buffalo and New England. Mm-hmm. And so you're like – there's so many teams that are like 6-3, 5-4. Like, it's literally all right here. So anything can pan out, and that's what you love about football. The NFC is a completely different story, though.
Yeah, it definitely – the NFC is now shaping up to be top-heavy in so many directions we can go. But you mentioned the MVP candidates, and it feels to me emerging out of Week 10 here, the two storylines are – well, I mean, there are a ton, as a matter of fact. One – I don't think the NFC defending champs are going to the playoffs. I told you that before the season.
No, I mean, I said this on the air. You with this loss in Pittsburgh, because you have to keep up. You're trying to keep up with the Vikings and the Packers. You're trying to keep up with obviously the teams in your division, the Seahawks and the Niners. Then you have Philly. You have Dallas.
New Orleans.
I mean, there's a bunch of...
At this point, you want the wild card candidates, not the division front runners to be... You want the Packers beating the Panthers. If you're the Rams, if you're the Seahawks, these are the teams. You want the teams that have a hold on their division to vanquish the teams that are vying for one of those six
seeds. And the problem is we were rooting for the Cowboys and they're playing back, right? And then I go to sleep, I wake up, and I see the Vikings won. So... you're fighting. Mm-hmm. You are in a dogfight right now to try to make it, and it's going to be an uphill battle. Now, hopefully, they can fix some things and get things going. But with all those injuries, they had seven linemen suited up for the game, and all seven played.
That was crazy, and it was a mismatch before kickoff, but then once you start getting injuries in-game in Heinz Field, the mismatch was so severe. But that should not diminish the ongoing dominance. In a game that featured Aaron Donald, and I don't know if you heard the 294 times that they brought it up within the 60 minutes, but Aaron Donald's from Pittsburgh. They brought that up a few times.
Because, you know, you rarely that will happen 8 years ago. It may happen in another 8 years, or another 4 years, I want to say, right?
Every four years.
So, this rarely happens where he plays Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. It was the first time. Pittsburgh always went to St. Mm-hmm. Louis to play him. So, it was a beautiful moment, I think. And like I said, when I was walking around town, like, the people love him there. Because not only, like, he spends majority of his time there. He has a house there. He trains there. He does everything there. Next to your, obviously next to the Steelers facility. So,
well, he grew up 10 minutes from me in Penn right. Hills. I am pro tip for anybody looking to get Aaron Donald's attention going forward. If you shout "Hail to Pitt," even if there are 200 other people around, he immediately locks eyes with you and's like, "Yeah, what's up?" Yeah, he hears it.
It's funny, after the game, everyone's out and they're kind of, you know. It's a bunch of people. I think they have Eric Scott went to Penn State. So there's a couple of Penn Staters on the team, and there's a lot of people. And Aaron was coming out, and someone said that, and he turned, and he kind of just looked, and then, you know, went on about his day. But in a sea of people, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about it. He loves the city, and he actually played really well. Like there were times in that game where they had Pouncey, Villanueva, and then whoever the left guard was.
DeCastro was also had Matt Filer over there.
Yeah, they were like
on him, but
triple teaming him at some points while other guys are doing other things. And so, it just shows the respect that he had. And then I have to say this, because I don't know what your offensive coordinator was thinking to do a play-action pass on the 5-yard line.
You know why that vexes me so, Maurice? Because I beg for the Steelers to run some play action. Now, I know Mason Rudolph is already a little sluggish with making a decision and getting rid of the ball. So maybe him turning his back to the defense would probably only delay that. But still, finally you're going to run some play action when you're standing in the end zone. Second safety in 2 weeks in Heinz Field.
Yeah, that's not good.
That was terrible. But Cam Hayward, dominant, and that pass rush in general, dominant, and Minkah Fitzpatrick and Joe Hayden and the rest of it. It really is something to watch, but let's not talk about that as much as Jared Goff. Yeah. And what do you think the wisdom? I said, again, I know I'm self-validating a lot, but I happen to have been right a lot so far in 2019. When they announced that deal, I said, what's the rush? Why did you have to get this deal done now? Why don't you let this season play out a little bit and see how
Goff
does?
Went to the Super Bowl.
All right, and but so what? So why do you have to pay him in September? That was it doesn't look wise now, does it?
You just don't know. Like, when you got to remember, like, you have to, when your team goes to the Super Bowl, regardless of how they played in the Super Bowl, they went to the Super Bowl.
Sure.
People forget with the second half what he did in New Orleans in the NFC Championship game. Like, he played lights out. So you have to reward your players for playing well. You remember, it wasn't just him that got paid, too. I mean, they paid Tyler Higbee. They paid Sean McVay. They paid everyone. Everyone, and that's their mantra, is if you do well, we will pay you. That's just how it is. I mean, I want to say they gave Robert Woods, like, money just because of how good he played. It had nothing to do with incentives. Like, here, you played well, here you go. And so that's their mantra, and that's why guys want to go and play for him. And so sometimes it may backfire for a season or different things like that, where you have other teams like the Redskins who are the total opposite, right? And and don't get me wrong, because I was just talking.
Well, if you're conflating the NFC champs with the Redskins,
I'm not. I'm just saying this the way the organization is ran.
I hear you.
There's
a
reason
the
Redskins have been bad for a long time, because they don't treat their players the right way or the people that they have in the organization. But I was just talking to someone, like, a Dolphins fan is like wearing their Dolphins gear, and it really just brought like clarity to everything. And they won two games, right? And they're like, "Yo, we're good." Like, and then as a Rams, we've lost four. You know, we're 5-4, and like everyone's like, I was at the gym today. Someone was like, "I can't believe you're wearing that." Like, woo, woo, and I'm like, dude, like, they're
Wait,
still
it's
in the
Monday morning. Yeah. You were in Pittsburgh last night. You flew back and went to the gym, and you're sitting here with me this morning.
Yeah,
what a pro.
I gotta go get it. I'm trying to go get this.
You're staying hungry, huh, Maurice?
Yeah, I'm starving.
That's the way Coach Jack Del Rio described you. You know,
I'm always
PO'd that you fell to the bottom of the second round, and then you have to stick it to the rest of the league.
To everybody, even the ones in Jacksonville.
Well, I do want to talk about the state of running backs in the NFL. I mean, I will until proven otherwise. I don't think that the Rams should have made that level of deal with Jared Goff, and I feel like. I mean, you know, he's league average. You know, is he?
Yeah, I mean,
is he? Can you rightly claim? And in fact, at this deep into his career,
This is the problem. You can say he's league average, but he went to the Super Bowl. Not everyone's done that, right? So you can have these great guys like Carson Wentz. He didn't go to the Super Bowl.
All right, well, that's circumstantial. But I hear you.
But he's been hurt every year, and they still paid him, right? You have guys like. I don't know.
The takeaway, Maurice, is that you – this is something I've been saying pretty much spaghetti. Correct me if I'm wrong. Have I not – in fact, I know I've been saying this since summertime, that we have now achieved QB saturation. All the injuries notwithstanding to quarterbacks, and you see all these guys, all the backups in there, there are plenty of human beings that can play decently – in the NFL at QB now. You don't have to overspend to retain your guy like that.
I don't
in his fourth year, it's all about Sean McVay. Everything's about the cutaways to Sean McVay. It's not about, as opposed to, I don't know, you know, well, Drew Brees and Tom Brady are the high-end examples of wizened old QBs
like,
who
like
are savvy.
Aaron Rodgers, right?
I'm just thinking, like, what's any QB going to do in the clutch? It's always a cutaway to Sean McVay. What's Sean McVay going to tell Goff to do? And that's a weird dynamic to begin with.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of being a coach is you know, it's your job to put him in position to be successful.
Is Sean McVay doing that? Because there's now some growing cynicism that maybe Sean McVay rested on his laurels a little bit and hasn't adjusted. Color me stunned, pleasantly so, as a Steelers fan, that 2 weeks to prepare for that Steelers defense, and they didn't score an offensive touchdown.
Well,
Cooper Kupp didn't catch a ball.
I know. Well,
he got owned by Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler.
Well, they did a great job of double teaming him a million different ways and changing the coverage and really playing to their leverage. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they played very sound football. They didn't blitz much, right? You didn't see a lot of blitzing because the rush was getting home. Mm-hmm. But that allowed them to play different coverages and different leverage on Cooper Kupp and other guys. I mean, I swear they had a coverage called Double Kupp, and they just literally had different guys doubling him in and out, making sure that he didn't get away from it. And when he did, you got the one PI penalty. But that was really it. Like, it was, you know, they did a phenomenal job. When you talk about Coach McVay, and I think, you know, we always talk about how the league makes adjustments, mm-hmm. right? After so many, you know, this is what this – I think Warren Sapp said it. I don't even know if I'm giving him credit.
It was definitely Warren Sapp, and I tried to give him credit for it because he said that to me 8-9 years ago
it
always ends up proven true.
It's like, what did he say, like the fastest
– adjusting organism.
Is the NFL, right? Is it defense.
Is the defensive coordinator, right.
And so with Coach McVay is he understand – like he's a very smart coach. He's a very smart player when he was playing. And he – there's certain things that he knows his quarterback does well. And they try to do that as much as they possibly can, which is what great coaches do. But the other thing to that is you have to develop your quarterback to do the other things he doesn't do well better so that you can do those. Because if all you can do is throw in-breaking routes or this route or that route or – like teams are just going to start sitting on those knowing like this is what you're trying to do. So you have to find ways to throw out-breaking routes or go balls or posts.
Well, they did a decent job at the start of the second half. You could see them moving the pocket a little bit to try and free up Goff a little bit. But it ultimately still comes down to – especially – I'm going to talk about another contract, and I told you that in December, Maurice, and I know you're a company man. I told you that a year ago now. I told you in January.
What?
Todd Gurley ain't right, and now
so I'm going to disagree with he ain't right. Because
okay, well, then it's weird that they're not using
him.
If he is okay, then that's weird.
That's something completely different. I think if you saw the runs that he had
against Pittsburgh. I thought he looked great.
He looked just like the guy that we saw last year.
I agree with you, but then it's weird that they're not concentrating on him more.
What is that? That's the $65 million, whatever. How many? That's the question. Like the $45 million question is, why aren't you using his? Why is he out of the game? And we brought this up. Why is he not in the game in the fourth quarter? And I had heard some rumblings that he had said something in his press conference. I didn't really listen to it because I normally do it today and then kind of work on it later on tonight. But in any situation, the best players need to be on the field, period. And that
you
is
give
a,
you I
give
mean,
the I, ball to your best. I remember playing the Cincinnati Bengals. I can't lie to you. I remember playing the Cincinnati Bengals at home, and it was like 4th and 2, and Coach Del Rio was like, "We're going for it," and so I remember the coach called a play, right? And Jack was like, "Hell no, we're not doing that. What are you? Give the ball to Maurice. He's our best player. Give him to Maurice. He'll get it, right?" And that's how it should be.
I kind of agree. I mean, I don't kind of agree with that. Obviously, you can vary things. If you always give the ball to Maurice, every fifth time you can use him as a decoy.
No,
but that's the point. And if you'll recall, to use the Rams at Steelers game as an example of that, when the Steelers are 3rd and a couple of inches, literally, on their side of the field, they ended up going for it on the fourth down and
the
rolled Mason Rudolph, and that worked, in fact, twice.
Well,
when
it
they
shouldn't
ran that.
Have worked because the corner fell. If the corner doesn't fall, he sits on it, and then you probably have a sack in that situation. But that's,
I hear you. But the point is, but the preceding play on 3rd and inches, I was pulling my hair out because at that moment, in that situation in the game, they put Mason Rudolph 3rd and inches in the gun with an empty backfield. No.
Oh, no, yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Empty backfield on 3rd and inches. Just go under center and put your head down. You're 6'4", fella. Just get the first down. What are they doing? The point being, why would you not have Todd Gurley when you are required, no matter what you think of him in 2019, you as a defense are required to focus on number 30. You must pay him some mind. And when you remove that, you make it easier on the defense. Same thing as going into the gun in short yardage. Well, they're obviously not going to run it here, so we know what they're going to do. Why would you show your hand like that?
So the thing to me was Todd broke off like a couple 12-yard runs, and he had a 20-yard run. And like all of a sudden, like I'm like, oh, this is a Todd from Denver. Last year where he started breaking off these long runs. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, it's over. And then the start of the fourth quarter, he's not even on the field for 2 drives. And he's not even looking like he's going to go in. And so I'm still trying to figure out what the situation is as well. I mean, I think America wants to know, all the Ram Nation wants to know, is because if he is, which we still know this offense, in order for this offense to go, you have to have a running game. It's a play-action pass offense. You can't play-action pass with no run attack, right? Why wouldn't you put it there when he was gashing this defense that is going up the field?
I don't care. I don't care if they don't give him the ball more than 6-8 times, but he has to be back there as the decoy. But I will say the larger question then becomes, if you look at Todd Gurley and the amount of money being paid to him, 1, 2, David Johnson, an abject bust because of injury and otherwise since he signed his big deal. Le'Veon Bell, I mean—
Oh, hold on.
Under 2 yards a carry.
That has zero to do with him. The only person that's stopping him is Adam Gase. Le'Veon looks phenomenal. Have you not watched it? Have you watched him? Yes or no? Le'Veon still looks like the Le'Veon that was at Pittsburgh. That's why Pittsburgh tried to trade for him.
He played the New York Giants yesterday. Not exactly
He didn't really play in the Giants game. He was coming. I mean, he was banged up. He had a knee and ankle. Right?
He had at least 13 carries, and he had under 2 yards a carry, so that's not phenomenal. The larger point is, and then to a lesser degree, Freeman down in Atlanta is now banged up. Why? And Zeke Elliott, even, who is healthy, was shut down by the Vikings on Sunday Night Football.
Vikings are good defense.
That's fine, but the larger issue is,
who do you pay then? Because
why would you ever pay a running back that kind of money? Well,
Would you not pay Christian McCaffrey?
I don't know. No, I don't think I would. I think that
Would you not pay Dalvin Cook?
No, I don't think.
Let's remember this.
Dalvin Cook missed all of last season.
You're living in this moment right here. They paid Todd last year, and Todd was rolling last year. And this question wasn't. I mean, there's
almost no impact on the postseason, though.
That's because when they played the Cowboys, he had 12 carries for 140 yards, like in the touch. Like he had an impact. That was their choice to not use him in the Super Bowl. He had 6 carries in the Super Bowl. Like I only can impact the game if you allow me to impact the game.
All right, but I'm just telling you. And then Saquon Barkley. The point is, it's not about the talent. It's not about how they're being used.
It
is about those things. What the number one issue is that in the 21st century, the banging, the repeated abuse that those running backs are taking – puts them on the shelf more than their predecessors. You didn't spend nearly as much time out of games with injury for whatever reason.
But I was utilized in different situations, though. I played receiver at certain points in my career. Like, they would put me out. Like, and this is where I get upset with a lot of these coaches those players you name. David Johnson was a receiver in college. Why is he not out there as a mismatch? Well, you know what I saw? I saw Pittsburgh put Jalen Samuels out at wide receiver on the linebacker and run a speed out, and he dropped it. But you're utilizing his talent as a mismatch. Like, this dude was a receiver in college. Todd Gurley can play receiver. Put him out there. Like, you don't have to turn around and hand running backs the ball anymore.
I know, but Christian, you're getting McCaffrey. Lost in the weeds with my point. No. Why these guys are taking up so much of the cap. And
but what I'm saying is, if
either because of the coaches or because of injury or because of diminishing returns from the banging that they've taken over three or five seasons.
But you can say that
seasons.
About every position, though.
No, like, not I've had, much,
I've had this
think.
I've had this debate with one of my boys in our group chat. People are like, well, so who do you play? You play quarterbacks? Well, okay, Drew Brees has got his thumb hit and missed 9 games. Like, and he's a 25% of your cap, right? You talk about all these other guys that have gotten hurt. Big Ben just got broke off. We don't have him.
Can I tell you the answer to that question that Matt Money Smith told us at the start of the season? It's left tackle. The mistake that the Dolphins, they're winning games and they want two and whatever else. And I think it was you who actually made this point, or maybe it was Handsome Hank. I confuse you two. You're basically the same human being to me. Is Tua, if the goal is to get Tua, maybe Laremy Tunsil isn't protecting his blind side because he's lefty, which is an interesting thought. But either way, that was a bridge too far. They shouldn't have given him away, and obviously they shouldn't have given away Minka either. And it's also funny that they've now essentially played themselves out of the first overall pick anyhow, one way or the other.
They'll probably get the LSU quarterback then.
I guess they might end up with him. But you're getting lost in the weeds. Spaghetti, right?
I'm just saying, who do you pay then?
I also said the Giants shouldn't have taken Saquon a year ago, and that looks right too.
No, but every situation
they're not using Saquon. Saquon, his first game against the Cowboys, had 11 carries in the first half for like 100 and some yards, and then they didn't give him the ball the rest of the game. I'm just trying to figure out, like, if I see a talent, right? If I know I have, let's say if I have 5 players, and let's say the tight end's number 1, receiver's number 2, running back's 3. Whoever my number 1 player is, I am going to get him the ball as many times as I possibly can. It's like the Cleveland Browns. You have Odell Beckham over there. How can you not get him the ball? Like, you traded for him. How can you not get him the ball? Period. Look, whatever you do, the number 1 objective should be getting the best player the ball as many times as possible.
People are afraid of differentiating, but in 2019, the Baltimore Ravens stuck their neck out. They picked up where they left off in 2018. They didn't say, all right, this potentially gimmicky thing that played like a knuckleball in the second half of 2018 got us into the postseason, but are we really going to invest in Lamar Jackson? You said it's a great idea to stick with Lamar, but you must build around him. You called that one. That was right. I agreed with you.
You know what they did, though? You want to know what they did?
What?
See, people don't understand what they did when this whole offseason.
I know what they did. What'd
they do?
I agree.
What'd they do this offseason?
They built it up. They brought in Greg Roman. They invested deeper in it instead of getting back and treating it as a side project. They made it the core of their philosophy.
What they did this offseason, which is what every coaching staff should do when you have a player of that caliber, any type of player, they went back to Louisville and brought all their coaches back. And they said, what did you do?
You did tell us that a couple
what
of times.
What did you do to get him to play this way? What kind of runs? And what passing? What the concepts that he was great at? Because again, you have to go to where. See, it's football. It's deeper than what people like. Yes, I always tell people it's checkers, not chess, which is true. But when you have a tremendous talent like, let's say, Lamar Jackson, I'm gonna go out there and be like, okay, what did you do to have him throw for 4,500 yards and have 1,500 yards rushing? What did you do? So then I can learn, because I have to let my ego go out the window. Because we're talking about Todd Gurley and the Rams. Remember what Todd did at the University of Georgia. What kind of offense did they run? You remember?
No.
They ran an old pro style. Fullback.
I would have said I. Okay,
yeah,
I'm
so
sorry.
They don't have that here. They're running 3-4 wide receiver sets. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not who he is. Todd is a downhill runner. He needs to go downhill, and once he hits a hole, he'll hit it because he has a speed to go through it. He's 220 pounds, 215 pounds. You have to
if this is what, again, if this is what you want to do, right? But granted, I feel like they're going more for Jared because that's, you know, they just paid him $100 million. He's the first overall pick. So they're trying to go to what he's comfortable with. What is he comfortable with? The spread system, where everything is out there. You kind of see what's going on. And so you have conflicting issues right now. And they have to find a way to have a happy medium in this situation.
It's
so
interesting
that you can
thought.
Utilize both of them. And all these
well,
situations.
The defenses, and it's, I mean, you know, going against Mason Rudolph and a diminished collection of pass catchers, that I'm not going to hang too much on the Rams' defensive performance. But the defense since Jalen Ramsey arrived, it does feel tuned up and ready to roll. But you know what? Now let's talk about. So we talk about Lamar Jackson, Eddie Spaghetti. Here's a fun exercise. I love the draft and what you should have done and what if and all that kind of stuff. Spaghetti, help us out here.
Sure.
Pick it up from Josh Rosen. Pick it up from the 10th overall pick and read through. And let's just very quickly assess if that team should have taken Lamar Jackson or the guy they took. Okay,
so
go ahead.
The 10th pick, the Cardinals took Josh Rosen, obviously no longer on the team. Should have they obviously taken
Talk
him.
About no. what if they would have, if the Lamar. Cardinals.
They didn't take, they should, they weren't ready for him. Because you got to remember, like, their offensive line was horrible. They weren't built for what – and they weren't willing to and really, Baltimore wasn't willing to do it either. They weren't willing to, like, do what it took to get Lamar Jackson, right?
It's a fair point that given their conventional sort of approach, Lamar Jackson would have been a bust. We probably would have seen very little of him at this point. But Cliff Kingsbury wouldn't be there right now.
Right. So
he'd be coaching Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, so think about what Cliff Kingsbury's done with Kyler Murray. They literally run the exact same offense that they ran at Texas Tech and Oklahoma. When you have those type of players, you have to change everything. And that's why I thought – Josh would have been good there because he was a pro-style quarterback. He could do all those different things. They just weren't, you know, at that point, they just didn't, they weren't ready. But I don't think Lamar would have been successful in Arizona.
I agree. Next. I mean, two offensive coordinators in the historically worst offensive line. The Miami Dolphins, 11th, took Minkah Fitzpatrick, who is now a Steeler.
Well, I mean, that's a tough one also to address given the moves they've made. They shouldn't have traded Minkah, clearly, in hindsight. Well, that pick's not going to have the value that they anticipated.
Then, who was their quarterback then?
Last year was Cuddy, right?
No.
Was that last year, the Cuddy?
No,
yeah, that was last year Cuddy was their
QB. He's been out for a while.
No, that was just last year, wasn't it?
Oh, he did.
Am I
back.
That crazy that
year?
I can't remember?
Was it him and Matt Moore last year?
No, not Matt Moore.
It was Tannehill. Tannehill was there.
Oh, but Tannehill was out for the year. That's why they brought Jay Cutler in.
Yeah.
That feels like 17 years ago. That'll be just last year. But again, now, yeah, obviously they would have been better off
But they would have been better off with Lamar, but I don't think because of his Lamar being from down there, and I think Adam Gase is not he wouldn't have been able to coach him, if that makes sense. Like, his style. See, what people don't understand, like, your style as a coach has to fit the player. Right, like
that's right,
John. I don't know. I was just watching the thing. John Harbaugh was talking to Lamar on the sideline. Like, he has embodied the Florida mentality in Baltimore. Like, look, you are the man. This is your team. I don't care what you wear. You can come in pajamas. You come in shorts. It can be 3 degrees. I don't care. But this is your team. He was embodied that. So when you get a guy like Lamar Jackson or anyone else,
Jay Cutler was 2017. That's when Tannehill got hurt with Matt Moore. It was Tannehill. We were right. Tannehill also did get hurt, and Brock Osweiler was quarterback for 5 games.
Oh, that's right. Oh, so that makes sense. Man, I'm
bad.
Having a hard time that's keeping bad. Things straight season after season.
But I still think Minkah, like, first of all, I'm not trading Minkah Fitzpatrick, right? Like, you have to learn to use him, and you obviously you see Mike Tomlin, those guys are putting him in position to be arguably up for he's probably gonna be defensive player of the
everybody
year.
Who declare I mean it's just that I we don't need to revisit that because we've been over it and right on it since they made the deal. But
were you happy for it or
without batting an eye, I never for a second said that it was something. Maybe if there was it never made sense that the Steelers would hold on to a first-round draft pick, and people act like first-round draft picks are guaranteed to be successful NFL players. It's a coin flip. It's like a 60-40 deal,
that's,
and
that's
who knows
the,
what they would have gotten
so this
out
is
of
the
that
thing.
Pick.
So just like you said, that is the Rams' mentality. They're like, I'd rather get a proven commodity than have a crapshoot of a draft
right,
pick.
Of course.
Because you don't know if you'll hit him.
Okay,
sorry,
continue, Spaghetti.
12, the Bucs took Vita Vea.
Okay, that's a great pick. I love that. Boy, that guy is a moose.
Oh, my God.
Washington took Deron Payne, nose guard from Alabama.
I mean, we'd certainly be singing a different song out of D.C. if they had him.
But would Drake Gruden, is he ready for that?
Like, he did a good – don't forget.
With who?
Andy.
Yeah, he only had Andy and Carson Palmer.
Like, Didn't he prefer Cap and Marv over Rode that, or is that the other way around? Or Hugh? I'm trying to figure that out. I can't remember how that went down. I can't remember.
I think it was Hugh.
Hugh wanted Cap. Okay, next.
14,
this is the big one.
The Saints took Davenport.
Oh, I'm sorry. So that's a good pick. No, they're obviously not going to replace. So 15 then, I think.
The Oakland Raiders took Colton
Miller. Oh, I'm waiting for Cincy to come up. Okay.
You got something to go. 16, the Buffalo Bills took, was it Tremaine Edmonds?
That's a good pick.
Good pick.
He's solid.
The Chargers, 17, took Derwin James.
That's probably the best pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm. 18, the Packers took Jair Alexander.
Okay. Great pick.
Dallas took Leighton Vander Esch at 19.
Solid.
Great.
20, the Lions took Frank Ragnow to play center. But, I mean, they have Stafford. I guess you don't really need him there.
Okay, so far this is checking out.
21 is the Bengals.
That's the one. I remember sitting there. I don't remember if I was with you at that draft.
Yeah, we were there.
And I remember, I mean, I was like, what, the Bengals, you're just going to ride with Andy Dalton? You're never going to the Super Bowl with Andy.
Where were the Jags in that situation?
They picked 29th. They took Taven Bryan.
Yeah, that was the one.
That's a huge one. That's the other one I wanted to get to here. You also might make a case in hindsight that maybe Pittsburgh should have gone Lamar. I thought that was not an insane thing because Coach T, Tomlin liked Lamar Jackson. Michael Vick really liked him, and Michael Vick's from the same neck of the woods as Tomlin. And I talked to Mike Vick at the draft, and I said, what do you think about, did you think there was a chance? He said, you know, Coach T and I kind of talked about that, and he likes Lamar. That knuckleball, if you could throw him out onto the field with seven, and now in hindsight, you wonder what that team would look like if you had dropped Lamar Jackson in versus Mason Rudolph. But I think Cincy is the big one. Guts,
the big one.
Having some courage and then leaning into it has made the difference, and that's the Ravens. Credit to Harbaugh, but also he was about to get fired a year ago, and he puts Lamar Jackson, and he just went all in on that, and now he is in line to be the head coach of the year and have the MVP on his team for showing those kind of guts.
There's a couple in a row here, I think, that actually they could have worked too. I mean, the Titans took Rashawn Evans, who's a good player, but I mean, at this point.
But that's not their. He's not their. You got to understand, like, Vrabel, that's not his style.
Sure.
Lamar Jackson is. In order for him to be Lamar Jackson, you have to let him be Lamar.
Greg Roman or something like that.
You have to really change everything. And Baltimore was really one of the only teams to probably do that.
The Pats at 23 took Isaiah Wynn, which is also, I think, kind of interesting. Carolina took Moore, 24. Baltimore had their first pick, and they took Hayden Hurst.
I have to go to a fantasy meeting.
You bum. I want to finish up with you real fast. One thing. Well, we talked about the Chiefs. The Chiefs are in real trouble.
Yeah.
Last thing, since you are our Jags whisperer, is that the right move to go Nick Foles?
I think it is. I think if Gardner Minshew played much better in the Houston Texans game, then you probably just kept Gardner in. But because Gardner Minshew kind of stunk it up, and I think people have enough tape on him now to kind of see where his flaws are, it's hard. You just got to go back to your guy now and understand that.
That's the bottom line. We all like the shiny new object, but I think Gardner Minshew, and I think also Kyle Allen, who's been fine. This is nonsense. This thing about the Panthers are going to let Cam Newton walk. If you ain't bringing in somebody else, and by the way, they still have Greer, and I still think he gets some snaps, but here's the concern for the Jags. If Nick Foles plays pretty well, then they can't let him go. I'm assuming no playoffs for the Jags this year.
What they're going to do is they're going to keep Foles and keep Gardner, and then eventually once Foles is done, Gardner will be the quarterback.
I don't know if I love that. I don't know how inspired that is. Maurice, what a pleasure to see you once again. I wish we could keep it further. Hey, real fast, it's time for the food block presented by Bon and Viv Spike Seltzer. Before you run, Maurice, what did you eat on the banks of the Three Rivers? Did you get a Permanthes?
No, I didn't. I didn't do all that.
I don't know why you don't do that.
Everybody goes to those places. I wanted to go to the fancy pantsy place. So I went to Eddie Merlot's, had a nice Wagyu steak.
I only ate
like a couple bites. It was too rich for my stomach.
Wow.
And then I had Rockefeller oysters, which was nice.
Ooh, that's very good. I like that.
I went fancy.
Were you with J.B. Long?
No, I was with some friends out there, so it was pretty cool.
Did you go to Pamela's? My old man swears by
it. We went to the Pancake House. It wasn't Pamela's. We were going to go to Pamela's.
My old man and Mo Damashek would have loved to have met up with you. I don't know when they're going to get a chance. They would love to have bought you breakfast.
If Pittsburgh makes the playoffs, you never know. We may have to go to Pittsburgh.
Wait, who's we now?
Me and you.
Oh, if just the Steelers. Yeah. I thought you meant if the Jags go, then you'll pay them a visit that way.
No. We would go because I'm a resident Steeler. I mean, it's still my second home.
That's true. You did announce your ownership of it. Yeah, maybe you could unlock all the secret doors since you have the key to the city.
They kind of let me walk through the city and do what I want. So
I warned. I was on radio all last week, and I just kept warning everybody. If you see Maurice and his two little boys with him, run away because you're going to get pelted with snow. Maurice is a disrespectful visitor, owner of our city.
At that point, we'd owned the place by then. I mean, we bought it in 2007.
Well, the good news is look forward to hearing Dave Damashek alongside JB Long come 2020 when I get in the broadcast booth. Thanks, Maurice. Great to see you, Pally.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
There goes Maurice Jones-Drew. Did we cover everything spaghetti, or do we have a little bit more to kibitz about?
We covered.
What'd you eat this weekend?
Saturday I had a bit of a party for the college games. We had people come over for the Penn State Minnesota game, which was at 9 o'clock a.m.
My phone didn't ring. That's Pacific. Funny. I didn't get any text messages or anything. Party. What party?
College football watching party.
I like to watch football. I like that. That's something I enjoy. And parties I like.
I would have loved
And
if
I like
there.
Food.
I just know you're a busy man on the weekends.
Oh, is that what you knew? Actually, can I tell you something?
Sure.
In this case, you were correct because I was off shooting something. The cat's out of the bag. If you are a fan, and I know a lot of people within the sound of my voice are fans, of the NFL, when I asked what if butterfly effect type questions about what if the tuck rule had gone the other way and so on. And we do those animations and have for 8-10 years now. Well, we've done a live action one. And as I tweeted over the weekend, listen, if they can turn Trolls and Angry Birds and Playmobil into feature length movies, then I think the NFL is well within its rights to also get a more extended execution of it. And so me, Daniel Jeremiah, Steve Weiss, Cindy Freeland, Cole Wright, Jim Trotter, and of course, Brian Baldinger was a great group. And we sat around and we kibitzed about it. And it's going to be a fun thing that you'll have by year's end, I think. I think they're going to start dropping those out there as they edit them up and everything before the end of regular season. So be on the lookout for those. What'd you serve at the party, though, as we do our food block?
I mean, I know that Handsome Hank made fun of me on Twitter for the picture I posted, but it was a lot of like vegetables.
Was Handsome Hank invited?
Stuff. He was not, no. I didn't think that people want to wake up. Like, people showed up to my doorstep at 9 o'clock in the morning, which is crazy to think, but there was a Penn State fan. But this is an early time for Pacific, so instead of going out to a place to watch these games, and then the LSU-Alabama game was on at 12:30, so it was just too early to go anywhere, so we had people come over, and we just did, like, it was more of healthier stuff, a lot of whole wheat.
Healthier options. Stuff.
Yeah, I gotta watch my figure during
you're,
the winter.
You are a fat.
I know.
You know how I know I'm a fat is because I've lost 10 pounds, and I'm still a fat. That's when it's really grim. It's like, hey, shape it up, and I'm about a third of the way to what I need to lose.
The problem with Los Angeles, it's not like it's back where if we were back east and it's cold out, you wear your jacket and stuff. Then like 4, 5, 6 months, you can cover up. Here it was like 84 degrees on Saturday, so you always look overweight no matter what time of year it is. So.
What was great, I will say, is that it does. I don't as much anymore. I try to be a professional and make sure I'm focused in on all the games on Sunday, so I don't do it as much anymore. But at the height of watching football on Sundays over at Kimmel's place with all the fellas, it is interesting the adjustment you need to make as an East Coaster when you land on the West Coast, that if you're watching Sunday football or college football on Saturday, that it's more of a brunch experience. You don't just jump right in on the fries and tacos and everything else. You got to start it off with some donuts and some pastries and such. Not any healthier, ultimately, but you still want to taste the breakfast. But it's also it was interesting to me that every game now, it's weird, the programming gods have kind of taken up residency in my brain, because My reaction to seeing LSU Alabama, I looked up to set the DVR for it, and I thought, well, 5 o'clock, is it on CBS or what channel is it on? And as I was saying, I was like, 12:30. This is an outrage. The games are at night. And then I thought, no. That's the way it's supposed to be. I like them under the light.
Well, also because the SEC, I know, has the contract thing where they only have one primetime game a year with the CBS contract. I think it's supposed to come be up soon. And the one primetime game they had already was the Georgia-Notre Dame game. So that's why LSU-Bama had to be a daytime game.
Oh, is that what the reason
you
was?
You only get one.
Well, listen, for whatever reason, I liked it. And by the way, as I say, I was shooting something on Saturday, so I missed that game and had to watch it back on DVR. But you just can't beat that autumn light, you know? It's the lights and everything else make it feel grand and special and everything else. But to me, given a choice, I like it under the light of day. I don't like NFL playoff games all being played at night. I like them better when you feel the elements a little bit, and those break through a lot better. I mean, the Packers-Panthers game was a great indication of that.
Besides that, yeah, like with the snow and it got darker at the end of the game, which is awesome. I do agree with you that the daytime games are better, especially when you could tell it's super cold outside just from what you could look at the screen. The one funny thing I was going to bring up, and this is perfect to talk to you about because of your Indiana-tized Big Ten. Every Big Ten game that I've watched is just gray. It's just constantly gray. It's a 10 o'clock.
I was called a steel gray sky.
It's 11 o'clock.
That was described.
It's like a noon kick, whatever time it is a day. And it's still always an overcast. It's dark. The lights are on. It's noon. It's like I've never every game in the Big Ten Conference. It's insane.
It's heaven. It used to be when I was growing up, almost every game outside of Ross Aid in Purdue, I think every single stadium had artificial turf, which took away from the games. Okay. But now they're almost all, I think, either natural grass or the hybrid. So that makes it look a little bit more pleasing to the eye. What do you think, though? Give me your final four now. I'm already getting angry because I know Alabama's going to go. But, if college football, the thing that why college football is better than all the other sports in terms of postseason tournaments is that the entire season by sort of intrinsically was built that it's a weekly episodic playoff series. And once you lose a game at any point in the season, you lose full control of your path to the Final Four. If you're one of the Big Five, if you're a Power Five conference team, and the thing that continues to disrupt that or what should be justice, I don't know what to tell you. There are any number of examples where the Saints, the best team in the NFL last year, let's say they were. Well, they lost. That was a weird call that they lost on. Yeah, but it still counts.
Right.
And that's they don't get a second crack at it. Alabama, the argument, yeah, but you know that they're better than blank. You know they're better than Minnesota. You know they're better. All right, they didn't even win their division. That's the way the cookie crumbles. I'm sorry. Houston Oilers, go bellyache to them in the late 70s. They were the second-best team in the NFL. When they lost to the Steelers, though, in the playoffs, nobody said, yeah, but they still should get to go to the Super Bowl. We all know that the Seahawks and Niners, we see the renewal of that rivalry.
Yeah.
When one beats the other in the playoffs on the way to Super Bowl 48 for the Seahawks, that was as close a game as you could get. Everybody knew that the Seahawks and Niners were the best teams. Nobody raised their hand and said, yeah, just send the Niners anyway. Everybody knows they're better. When the Broncos lost in overtime to the Ravens in 2013, nobody said, yeah, everybody knows Peyton's Broncos are the better team and would win 9 out of 10 times. Put them in the Super Bowl instead. That's just not the way it works. Yeah. Alabama, you lost in your division. You're not even going to be playing for the conference championship. You then don't get to jump over that and be in the Final Four. How say you?
I agree in the sense that if you lost, you should be out. But they do have the Iron Bowl left. Auburn's a good team. If they beat Auburn, they'll still be in the mix. I mean, LSU, if they slip up and they're both one-loss teams in the SEC, I think you could say far and away LSU is the best team right now. I'm okay with saying that. I think Clemson will still be the
if Georgia beats them, if one-loss Georgia vanquishes undefeated LSU, I'll hear an argument for LSU. What I will not stand for is an Alabama argument.
Let's say LSU, let's say they go undefeated. LSU, let's say Clemson stays undefeated.
You lost at home, Alabama. You have no claim to anything at this point.
And then Ohio State, who is your fourth team then? Is it a one-loss Georgia? Is it?
Are we assuming that Minnesota is going to lose head-to-head?
to Minnesota has a couple of tough games left.
Okay, but let's just say it's not going to happen. Everybody is way to say, I hate to be a curmudgeon about it, but let's say that the Gophers get to an undefeated spot against Ohio State, and Ohio State's undefeated. If that game's relatively close, what case would you make for Alabama over Minnesota? I don't care. And the argument, and let me just take away the one I'm predicting most people, including you, are going to make. You know deep down, Dave, that Alabama would beat Minnesota head to head
on a neutral site by multiple touchdowns.
Yeah. All right. I'm not in control of when the NFC West has more good teams in it than the entire AFC in certain years. I can't. Well, all right. Well, so what? That's unfortunate, but you got caught up in an era when there were other heavyweights in your specific immediate division, and that makes it so that you don't get to play in the national championship
if we can meet halfway, and I would agree on this. If you want to give me, instead of a one loss Alabama, if you want to give me a one loss Oklahoma or maybe an Oregon or Utah instead of putting Alabama in there like always, I'm okay with that.
That's right. If the Pac-12, I mean, does it matter that it's a Power 5 conference or does it not? Is the ACC weak this year?
Yes,
of course it is. Now I'm getting into self-interviewing, and that never works out for me or for anyone else, really. But yes, the ACC in 2019 is weaker, but it's also a Power 5 conference. That matters or it doesn't. And you can't and based on the history since they started doing this thing, and BC, even go back to the two-team BCS championship game, it's supposed to be relevant that you're in a Power 5 conference. And yet the SEC, it always skews in their direction, and I'm here to tell you that's rubbish, just as it's unfair that in the NBA in the 80s, the Lakers had a relative breeze to get to the finals to play the Celtics, who had to get through the Pistons and Dominique and the Bucks and the Sixers. It was always unfair because Larry Bird and company were going to be a little more fatigued and beaten up than Magic and company were. But that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Sure.
I'm sorry. There only is one team that gets to come out of it from that side. You cannot have you can't have two of your Power 5 conferences not represented because, well, Alabama, we know deep down, is really good.
Well, what's funny is, like, Clemson, there's a really simple path for Clemson to be probably the only undefeated team in the Final Four. I mean, it can get messy if, like you said, LSU loses to Georgia. If Penn State takes down Ohio State in, what, like 2 weeks or something like that?
They won't.
Especially if Chase Young is not playing. I agree. They probably won't. They're not as good. But if that happens, it's like a one-loss Ohio State, a one-loss LSU, one-loss Alabama, undefeated Clemson. You have 2 1-loss Pac-12.
I would love
teams.
It if they tried to keep Ohio State out in favor of Alabama. If Ohio State, I mean, I don't think it would. If the Gophers got to a title game and lost a one-loss Ohio State would go. But I mean, again, I would not argue for the Gophers much versus Alabama, but again, I do think it matters, the hierarchy of it. If you happen to get caught up in a good division, a couple of years ago, the NL Central in MLB, the three best records in baseball were all in that division.
Mm-hmm.
The third place team didn't get to go to the playoffs. All right, that's a shame. That stinks that you got caught in a bad season for you. The sports gods frowned on you. Somehow Alabama is allowed to just defy that year after year. They lost a home game. They lost at home.
Yeah, I mean, but
it's a little overstated even how close that game was. Yes, it was great, but they had to put on a furious rally to even make it look close. It's not like it was back and forth game to begin with. LSU handled them pretty good.
To a degree, I think certain other teams get.
To a degree, I get it.
Tua's
not going to get a degree.
If Ohio State has one loss and Minnesota has one loss, Ohio State is still across the nation, like, because of their pedigree, people will favor them over Minnesota. I think it's one of those things, same things as Alabama. It's they're always going to get the nod over other one-loss teams. That being said, I think in terms of one-loss teams, because Oregon only lost to Auburn, a neutral site, not even in their conference, that is probably, to me, the strongest one-loss team, just because they did not lose a Pac-12 game as of yet. So I think that, I mean, they should be involved in it as well.
And if they, you know, if this is where we're tracking, then the thing I always look back on from whatever that was now, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, probably about eight, if Texas would have joined the Pac-12 at that point, then everything would have been clarified. You would have had four power conferences, and then just whoever wins that is are your final four representatives. But as it stands now, that fifth one throws it out of whack, and now we're evaluating. These guys are evaluating in a room like, well, the ACC isn't as good as the SEC, so the second-place team, but really it's the third-place team because that team didn't even win its division. Somehow trying to justify that ruins the whole thing, and it ruins the spirit of what has been true my entire life, which is college football is better by structure than every other sport because you lose one game, you now lose control of your destiny.
Right.
Then you have to have things break the right way and people have to perceive you in a certain way. You run the table, you're always in the mix for the national championship. Somehow that now is out the window in favor of some other stuff. It's weird to me. Last thing, and then we'll wrap it up here. You mentioned Penn State. That reminds you me of your boy 26 and the back and forth of how Saquon's played. I'm curious now. Let's get an update. The biggest bust of the season, Falcons and Browns notwithstanding, is what I thought was going to be fascinating. 26-26 in New York City this year, and neither one has worked out. Are you willing to now admit that taking him was not the greatest idea ever?
I'm not going to get on his case for being injured. I mean, he has
that's what it is to be a running back, like we said with Maurice.
But you have
to factor that in. These guys are going to get hurt.
Right, but Le'Veon Bell, for the most part, wasn't that injured this year, and he's just kind of, you know, the Jets are a bad team.
He's been hurt a couple of times already this year.
But Saquon should have been out. He should still be out. He should be out for a couple more games, according to how severe the injury is.
I kind of agree with that.
People go across the NFL, they say a high ankle sprain is like one of the most devastating, obviously besides like a ruptured Achilles or a torn ACL, what have you, because it's just an injury that lingers forever and you can't cut, especially if you're running back. Like, the beat writers of the Giants are saying that he is not explosive because he is just not like looking to go lateral anymore. He cannot press off his foot. So I think he's injured, and I think that it's just a lost season, and I'm okay with them kind of tanking it.
Do you think they're going to shut it down with 26?
They should at this point.
I need him on my fantasy team. You told me last week I should dump him, and I wish I would have listened to you.
Yeah, he wasn't right, and he came back. He rushed himself back because he thought there was a spark and a chance in his head, and I don't blame him thinking, okay, well, Evan Ingram's going to be back, and Sterling Shepard hopefully at that point thought he's going to be back and healthy. If I'm back, Daniel Jones is playing really well. Like, you know, let's just see how, like, the defense at that point, Betcher kind of figured out certain things, and then literally since then, the defense has been back to being awful. Both Solder and Remmers playing left and right tackle cannot block anyone. I mean, Daniel Jones yesterday, I'm not sure if you saw the play, Jamal Adams just came in and just took the ball from his chest. Like, I know a lot of the fumbles people have been getting on Daniel Jones' case, but when you don't have somebody blocking one of your sides, and he had no idea Jamal Adams was coming, who was in one of the top three safeties in the whole league, he just took the ball from his chest. Like, what? I don't know what he's supposed to do in that case. It's just like the team was crumbling in every which fashion.
You know what's a fun question, though? If we assume Gase is all but certainly gone. But it's weird that they lose to the Dolphins and then bounce back to vanquish the Giants. And now this mix of teams that is vying for the first overall or for the first few picks, I wonder, I talked to Daniel Jeremiah this weekend, and I said, we're in that window now where most of the experts are now saying, like, I don't know if any of these QBs is worth the first overall, and I don't know how many guys are really worthy of a first overall. I mean, a first round grade. Spoiler alert: 4 to 5 are going to go. So rest assured on that. But I wonder if you're a head coach, and let's say Shurmur goes as well, which team? Hey, both New York teams want to hire you. Which gig do you take? Do you go with Sam Darnold, Lev Bell, Quinnen Williams, and Jamal Adams, or do you go to the Giants to take over with Danny Dimes, Saquon, Evan Ingram, Dexter Lawrence, et al.? It's an interesting debate.
That's a really tough question. Put a pin in that one.
Let's ask that to our pals for our Wednesday podcast, Matt Money Smith.
Sure.
And Handsome Hank's out. So let's put a pin in that.
That's very good. Yeah.
Cliffhanger. So you'll sit in for Handsome on Wednesday's video show. We appreciate you following along and watching that, rating and commenting the podcast and watching on YouTube every week. We appreciate you, DDFP listeners, sending us the ears, the eyeballs every week. Let's wrap it up there, shall we, Spaghetti?
Sounds good to me.
All right, we'll do that. Thanks to Maurice Jones-Drew. We hope he's not a stranger. He's a man about town, though. He's all over the football America. It's hard to wrangle him. The other thing we got to get is David Carr. That was the other guy with his Raiders in play. We got to see if we can track him down.
Yeah, I know people have been tweeting, and we're trying to get David. Like, there were some weeks that David could come on, and like schedule-wise, you were busy. Other weeks that like he was not available, but he wants to come on. We will get him on very soon.
All right, excellent. All right, so for Maurice Jones-Drew and Eddie Spaghetti, back in a couple of days. Until then, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.